Hey guys, Charlie here. And before we get into today's show, just a quick plug for Will's stand-up tour. That's right, Will Anderson is getting back on stage. So his shows at the Brunswick Picture House have been rescheduled and are now happening on February 18th and 19th. After that, if you're in South Australia, you can catch him at the Adelaide Fringe, February 24th to March 5th. And his brand new show, Willogical, will be part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival 2424 promotion, which means all tickets are $24 for a period of 24 hours. And that will be happening on Tuesday, February 1st. For more information, go to willanderson.com. And now, here's the show.
The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson and my guest this week is comedian, writer, host of the Junktime AFL podcast and I believe a vocal supporter of the convoy to Canberra, Michael Chamberlain. Welcome to FOFOP.
Hello, Charles. Have we met before? I don't think we've met before.
What do you mean?
No, I just feel like this is the first time we're talking to each other. Right? We don't know each other.
We've known each other since we were probably at 11 years old. Why do you ask?
Oh, I know. I'm just trying to make a joke, but it not work at all. What? So, okay, the idea, Charles, is that, what is it? Yes, and? That's the idea.
Sorry.
You're like a news reporter. You're just like, well, I don't think that's factually correct, Michael. We've known each other since we were 10 years old. We went to school together.
I didn't know we were launching into a bit. Can you give me some kind of visual cue that that I'm meant to be improvising? Mate, I'm off the clock right now. You don't get free acting from me.
Have you been okay? Have you got this? Have you had the spicy cough?
Yeah, man, I got it. I was ahead of the trend. I got it at the start of December, so about a week before New South Wales lifted all the restrictions, before Dom let a rip, as I believe the hashtag is. Gemma and I actually were invited to a friend's 40th, and it was the first party I reckon I've been to since Iona was born, so we were quite looking forward to it. We thought it was going to be at someone's...
And it was in Byron?
Yeah, we thought it was going to be at someone's house. And so we're like, oh, that's cool because, you know, it won't be too compact. We'll be in the backyard and stuff. But it turns out it was at a bar.
It turned out it was in an ICU.
Yeah, well, I walked in and it was like, this is a very small bar and no one's masked up. And even though it was before Omicron kind of wave, I sort of was like, this is probably not a good idea.
Here we go.
And then so a couple of days later, I had a bit of a – I just was feeling a bit under the weather. So I just got – I didn't actually think I had COVID. I just thought I should do the right thing and get a PCR. And it came back positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was pretty sick throughout 2 days, just like had fever and, just felt shit. And then after about day three or four, I started to feel okay. But about 2 weeks, I reckon, before like I got my breath back and I sort of lost my sense of taste for a little while as well.
Yeah, wow.
And then Jem and Iona caught it as well. So we were – it was funny because we were – It was about to go bananas up here, but we were right at the start, so we were still being treated like lepers because all of a sudden we had to go into isolation for, I think it was 10 days back then, like a month ago, 2 months ago. It feels like it was six months ago.
December 2021. Those times in the olden, when we had horses
in the olden days. But so we just had to text. I tried to do a delivery service from like Woolies, but they kept... just not delivering, which is really inconvenient when you've got a 2-year-old and you need like nappies and stuff. They just wouldn't turn up and then they would just send you a text saying, sorry, man, we just couldn't get around to it. It's like...
We went to the beach.
It happened two days in a row. The first day I was like, well, you know, fucking, you know, logistics and it's a trying time. I won't get too annoyed. But then the second time when it happened... Mate, that fucking call center, wherever they're based, which I don't think was Australia, I was doing that thing of that passive aggressive. Mate, look, I know you didn't stuff this up, but this
it's not on you, mate. It's not on you.
This is my situation. And he was just sitting there going, yeah, look, mate, we can have this whole conversation, you can vent, but it's either get your money back or you can try your luck again. It's like, all right.
Yeah, sure.
So we had have friends come drop off groceries, but it was hilarious. Like Sammy Cav, he and his son turned up and they were like in hazmat suits and they left like a box of groceries like 20 meters from our front door and like ran back to their cars. Because I came to the door to say, oh, thanks, guys. And they're like, no, stay away.
Fuck off, yeah, fuck off.
Exactly.
And Jem and Iona were okay? Like?
Jem and Iona were fine. If I hadn't tested positive, they probably wouldn't have got tested because they had no symptoms. Well, Jem had a little bit of like hay fever or something like that, hay fever type symptoms, like, you know, runny nose. I was the worst of us. And Iona was completely fine, which is good.
But it would have been concerning for you know that Jem has it, but Iona particularly, I imagine.
Yeah, well, the rule of thumb, because, you know, there's when you have a kid, at the start you're kind of calling the telehealth line all the time because you're like, you know, they're doing this. Is that okay? You're doing this. Is that okay? And the rule of thumb generally is, like, if your kid is just happy and laughing and walking around and stuff, like, then that's a really good sign. What you should be worried about is if they're lethargic, unconscious, anything like that. So we did
in a pool, not breathing.
Yeah, drunk, high. You know, drunk and driving. That's a real concern for your toddler. But she,
opioid problem.
She seemed fine. In fact, she actually tested negative the first time. But then I took her back when I finished, because I was a couple of days ahead of Jem. When I finished my isolation, I took Iona back, and then she tested positive. But we couldn't work out. Because the nurse also said it might have been possible if she gave a false positive the first time around, because it's about viral load and she's quite small, obviously. So, but I wouldn't have described her as being ill. If I didn't know that we had COVID, I would not necessarily have been worried about her.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, it's funny. I went down to Melbourne. I live in Sydney and went down to Melbourne for Christmas, and I reckon like 7 of my immediate family got it. And then we had some cousins, about 9 cousins, come down from Sydney to Melbourne for a few days. And we hung out with them, you know, 3 or 4 times. And then I think like 7 of the 9 got it.
Hell.
And for some reason, I didn't get it. And I was like, I don't know how I didn't get it. I went to test it negative and gave mum and dad some.
You're vaccinated. Because we caught up in the period while I was most infectious. We caught up. It was one of those things where it's like, I went 4 weeks without seeing anyone. And then in that 2-day period, we had dinner party and, you know, we caught up with friends and, you know, went to a barbecue and stuff. And so it was a really, at the time, because it was so early in the wave, I was felt like really humiliated. I was like, oh God, I don't want to have to be that guy to, you know, go through my contact list and sort of. So I did have to call and text everyone to say, hey man, you're a close contact.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Blah,
yeah.
blah, blah. But of all the 12 people that we caught up with, and like we were in a booth having dinner with my friend's family, like, you know, a foot from each other, sharing chips and like you'd think a pretty contagious situation. But they all tested all tested negative, not one person, and they're all double vaxxed, and I think that's probably why.
Yeah, no, it's I think I'd got my booster 2 weeks, maybe mid-December. But so when because mum and dad have like a little upstairs bit with a bedroom and a bathroom where I kind of live. And so I could isolate up there and stuff like that. But
let's not undersell it, Michael. Like your parents have preserved it the exact way it was when you were 14 years old. There's like posters of Hawthorn players and wrestlers all over your wall. Your Royal Rumble toy set is set up in the corner with 40 figurines.
I think when I was about 14, I think I had a poster of Christine Applegate, I think I might have had one of them. It was probably a married with children kind of pose too. Like,
do you reckon, you know, it was one
something kind of tight?
Was it one of those TV hit specials where you put it? Or was it like a custom made big poster?
You know what? That could actually could have been a TV hits lift app, because I remember my sister would get that magazine, and so then when she's finished with it, I'd read it and it's like. For anyone that doesn't know what TV, well, how do you describe TV hits magazine?
To a kid,
like, it was
now.
Like for teens.
I guess it was all about teen heartthrobs. It was bands, TV stars and movie stars, but teen actors. So, I mean, who in our era, who would it be? It was like the 90210 kids.
For sure, for sure. I actually even remember an article that which turned out to be like a friend of a friend of a friend of my cousin, I think. And she wrote a diary, an article, like a diary, like day by day. She was like a publicist, and Luke Perry came out to Australia, and so it was like the day by day of like what she did with Luke Perry during that trip.
Yeah. So what did she do with Luke Perry on that trip?
Well, I think it was like took him to Bondi and then he did a bunch of interviews and stuff like that. But it's also funny by the fact like you just wouldn't get that nowadays. No. Like, you know, TV people coming out for a week to do like a whole bunch of different shows and stuff like that.
Well,
like,
I've just gone to a website called Crazy About Magazines, which has just got I guess it's like an archive of all old glossy mags from the 90s. And so this is a sample. I'm looking at TV hits from September 1989. On the cover is Jason Donovan. You've got Alex Papps and Bobby from Home and Away in the corner. And then you've got a full, wow. You've got a pull-out poster, two posters. One is Annie Jones, who played Jane on Neighbours.
Ah, playing Jane. The other one. She's back on Neighbours now.
Which would be horrifying now. It's a pull-out poster of Craig McLaughlin to put on your daughter's wall. There goes.
Well, Annie has come back to Neighbours. And I think she's been there for a couple of years now, if not longer. But there was an incredible plot line recently because my friend Vaya does the Neighbours podcast. Right. And so she's shattered at the minute because the fact, well, you should be shattered as well, Charles, by the fact you've been you were a pyromaniac.
I was the pyromaniac fireman.
But
voted.
It could be coming.
I think I was voted TV Soaps Villain of the Year in 2008 in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a. Do you put that on a CV?
I didn't even know about it till about 10 years later, someone sent me a link. So, I mean, until I get the gold in my hand, Michael, until I'm holding it.
Did you have a romantic interest on
the
show?
Yes, Carla Bonner's character, whose name escapes me, Stephanie, maybe? I can't remember. Carla Bonner, I was her boyfriend. She was on a break from Toadie, and I came in as this fireman, and Toadie took a dislike to me. Everyone thought I was like this hero because I was this fireman and, you know, a nice guy and good with her kids. But he suspected that there's something not quite right with me, and it turns out he was right. I was a pyromaniac. And
were you living actually in Ramsey Street?
No.
Or were you just like a random fireman?
No, because I don't know what his name was, but Brett Tucker, he was a regular on the show. And in a weird coincidence, because Brett and I are mates in real life, I was a mate of Brett's. And so Jem always says it was a really surreal moment for her as a kid who grew up in the UK watching Neighbours, when she was watching Neighbours and she saw Brett Tucker, who she knows really well, and then her boyfriend walk into like one of the living rooms on Ramsey Street and shake hands and introduce themselves or something like that.
Yes, yeah, so it's really weird. Like They're not drunk. They're not in lines.
Wow, this is great. This TV hits issue from 1992 features Craig McLaughlin and Michael Jackson. So if you're looking for TV hits sexual assault special.
Fucking hell. Is Ivan Milat somewhere?
He's the pull-out.
Our top five serial killers.
The only poster I clearly remember having on my wall, like girl poster, which is so weird to think of because I was not necessarily a big fan of hers, was Paula Abdul. And I remember it wasn't like a TV hits pull out free poster. I went to a poster shop and bought this poster of Paula
and
Abdul.
Bought one.
And I was never even a particularly big fan of her at the time. I just think I thought this poster was kind of sexy, and it wasn't really. Like, she was pretty much fully clothed, just posing, but I was like, yeah, that's all right. Paula Abdul, something. Oh, those choreographers, man.
Do you remember that, though? Like, you'd go to, like, the big thing was, like, going to a video shop and kind of seeing if you could get a poster that was, like, I mean, you'd know this, you would have had this when you're working at the video shop. But also just going to shops and, like, there were posters. Like, I just don't see posters shops anymore.
No.
Maybe I'm not going to the right place, but
it's like a specialised thing now. Like, if you went in Melbourne to Chapel Street Bazaar, I'm pretty sure they've still got that. Like, there's like a memorabilia section. But also, everything's online now.
Yeah, for sure.
So why would you
have
a hard copy of something when, you know, you can order it from the States?
But I remember, like, you could go to, like, say, like a CD shop or something, and they would have a kind of poster section you could flick through.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think I actually ever really bought anything, but... But yeah, I think
the kids even have posters anymore. Like, is it, this is, it's an old man thing to say, isn't it? Like, do kids, like, if you went into a teenager's bedroom now, like, I think of the 80s cliche where it's like Farrah Fawcett and Pink Floyd on the wall. But yeah, are you going to walk in and see, like,
bands,
Olivia Rodriguez and I can't think of.
I can speak of my nephew and nieces, and I can't picture in their bedrooms right now, I can't picture any posters on their walls. I remember when they were, like, younger. Like, I remember my niece had JoJo from Dance Moms, I think it is. JoJo something. But that was also, like, had the times tables on it. So it was, like, an educational poster, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I can't picture anything on their walls nowadays.
I remember your...
Because they're all, like, bloody on their screens,
I remember
mate.
Your walls pretty clearly. Because you, I stayed at your place quite a bit when we were kids. Because I don't know if we established at the start, but we know each other. We know each other pretty well. Known each other for 30 years. But
yeah, if you don't, if you didn't catch on with that incredible Abbott and Costello routine at the top of the show,
who's on
we
first?
Just read each other's minds.
Well, are you talking about the person whose surname is who, or are you talking about first base in baseball? Because I'm confused.
No, you'd say a lot.
Yeah, you. I remember you had a lot of Hawthorne posters, and you had a couple of the, maybe not a couple, but it was at least, it was one of those kind of, it was like a Drew Struzan poster where it was painted. It wasn't a photograph. It was like, it was, and it was, yeah. Paul, it was Paul Hudson, Jason Dunstall, Dermot Brereton. Was Gary Ayres, did he make the poster?
Maybe. I think it was a few of the kind of legends of the club.
Oh, so was it old ones too, like Hudson, Peter Hudson?
I feel like there might have been Peter Hudson on it. I could probably like look it up and find it, but I feel like Paul Hudson got lucky on that one.
He really did.
He had a great 91. He had a great 91. But then he did go and play Richmond and Footscray. So club legends at stretch. But yeah, it was like one of a... It was a poster in general, but it was almost like a commissioned... it was a reproduction of a painting, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think it had a few kind of the legends of the club on it. Yeah, but I did have a lot of premiership posters on the wall, Charles. But yeah, actually, I did have quite a decorated bedroom. I'm not really sure.
It's a weird...
I don't know.
It's a weird tradition, and it's sort of mainly to do with, I guess, pop culture art and sports culture art. You know, like the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, where it's like Humphrey Bogart and Marilyn Monroe and James Dean having like a coffee together. Yep. And this, if you go into the foyer at Moorabbin, there's a big, like, it's a locker room, but it's like saints from every generation, like pulling on their socks and slapping each other on the back and stuff. And it's always this really weird, I mean, I don't understand, like, what is the genre of, let's take a group of people from different generations and act as, is it heaven? Is it pop culture heaven or sporting culture heaven?
I'd hazard a guess that particular painting would be the team of the century.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it's the guy Jamie Cooper, I think it is, and I think he's done one for like pretty much every team when they've had a team of the century. There's a one at the MCG of Melbourne's team of the century. I mean, it's in the members, so you probably can't see it. But I know there's like a Hawthorn one where they kind of, most of them are in the locker room, you know, and it's like, say the Carlton one, I think it's Bruce Dool, and he's like, if you look under his foot, he's standing on a magpie. So they put in little references like that.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Easter eggs. It must be hard though, because I know with Foz, when he does the artwork for our shows, like, he's always complaining that he doesn't have enough reference photos because, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to draw, and so he needs your face from every angle and every expression if he's going to do it correctly.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
So,
yeah,
you know, for instance, with the Saints one, it's all the players, the team of the century, in the locker room having a laugh, you know, and getting either getting dressed or getting undressed. I'm not sure what's going on. Tony Lockett's completely naked. It's a weird choice. I don't know.
they're either about to go to a party or they're at a party.
But that he'd be working from, you know, especially with, like, you know, the Second World War era players. Like, he would have had like three photos probably in black and white to work from, yet he's got to give that guy a VB and have him slapping Stewie Lowe, you know, on the back.
Yeah, actually, that's really interesting about Foz, like, wanting kind of different angles. Like, I actually never thought about that. And one of the things about coming on this pod is like to see what the artwork will look like, and you just hope it's flattering enough.
I got some bad news, Michael. we don't do original artwork for FOFOP anymore. We just
no, I do.
But you got one. You got one the last time you're on, so you can just look at that one again. Yeah. No, we just couldn't justify it in the end. We're trying to bloody tighten our belts a bit, and it was like we pretty much get the same three guests on FOFOP every week. Like, I'm not sure if it, like, okay. You know, Willosophy kind of warrants its own artwork because it's pretty much new people every week. TOFOP's a new topic each week, but FOFOP tends to be Will and Justin Hamilton and me and three other people. So it's like,
yeah, sure. Yeah, I wonder about Willosophy. I haven't done it, but just like that kind of, when I see the artwork and it's like the kind of the quote on the artwork, and I think that's pretty like rather intimidating. You kind of like, you know, what will the quote be like, to kind of, you know, not sum up the person as a whole, but just like it's just good representation of the person.
What do you think? What do you think? Just to speculate. What would yours be? It'd be something along the lines of like, although the Ultimate Warrior is considered a great, his in-ring ability was quite subpar.
No, I'd be concerned, like, I'd make a joke, like, you know, Hitler was a good man, and then, like, it taken completely out of context, and it's like, you see yourself online with a quote, Hitler was a good man, you go, whoa, I didn't mean it like that, I was joking. But I probably would say something about the Ultimate Warrior.
Do you ever worry about getting cancelled? Have you ever said anything on Junk Time that would get you in trouble? I mean, I know Adam is more the firebrand when it comes to the two of you, but has there ever been anything that you've put up and you're like, we'll see how this goes down. I've got a feeling maybe.
No. But also, like, you know, there are certain stories where you kind of go, we can't touch that. Like, you know, there's, you know.
Certain players getting to 100.
But no, I have no worry about getting cancelled. And also, I do love the idea, like, there was, you know, you kind of watch these Netflix specials and stuff like that, and it's like comics kind of going, you can't say anything anymore. And then you go, I think you're standing in front of 5,000 people and you've been paid $20 million for this. I think you can say anything.
Yeah, they always have the name of their tour is also always something like, you know, triggered, you know, politically incorrect, you know, silenced, cancelled, uncancellable. Yeah.
But no, I don't think that's a worry at all. And then also, I think people are pretty savvy as to what's a joke and what's a statement, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, I mean, no, they are, but I think that there's a, I think with a lot of this kind of, especially with comedians, when, you know, some comedian will be filmed doing a warm-up set somewhere or trying to work out some material, and it's like, you know, he made fun of these school kid, you know, shooting victims, or, you know, he made fun of trans people, whatever. And it's like, A, where was that going? Like, he might have been working that up. But B, I also think that that footage gets posted, and we all live in this culture of just, like, grabbing the headline and not really actually reading. So I think it just plays into whatever your bias is. Like, if there's a celebrity that you dislike, that someone comes out and says, oh, you know, that they did this or did that, you just can go, great, I always thought they were a fuckhead, and move on. And then, like, I think that, because, yeah, context means everything, but I don't think we're wired to look for context anymore, or we're just, all we want is confirmation bias. Is, you know, we get fed stuff on Twitter, we get fed stuff on social media, which aligns with what our views already are. So I'm not going to – if Ben Shapiro comes out and says something really smart and kind of balanced, that'll annoy me. I want to know that Ben Shapiro is always going to piss me off, and that I'm very counter to Ben Shapiro. I don't want to hear him making good points.
Yeah, and I think they – but you're right. Like, you often already – they're not popular. Like, not in terms of like – they could be like, you know, could open a movie or something. But like – but you have this underline, like, I don't reckon you're a good person. And so when you hear them kind of, you know, do something, you can eventually jump on and be like, oh, I knew it, they were a cockhead. Mm. But, I mean, cancel is what it is. I don't know what it actually is. Yeah. Like, in terms of, like, I remember, you know, I think it was a couple of years ago or something, and I was like, oh, what's Louis CK up to? Mm. And so I just kind of went to his website and checked out his tour dates. He was playing arenas.
Yeah.
Like, playing arenas in like at the time it was like a lot in Europe and stuff like that. But I'm like, I don't think that's cancelled when you have 8,000-10,000 people showing up to your shows.
Yeah, it does just feel like part of that culture war to distract us from what's really going on. As we're recording this, I'm quite looking forward to, I don't think I'll watch it, but seeing the reaction to the 60 Minutes special on Scott and Jenny Morrison.
Scott,
I mean, everyone by now has seen that ukulele clip, which is just, dude. It's amazing how David Brent he is. Like, it's just, I don't know if it's kind of they're aware of that and they're like, well, let's lean into that because there's a kind of lovable affability about it. But it really pisses me off because 6 months ago when we were living in the Gold Coast and we weren't going out much, I bought myself a ukulele and I've been teaching myself. And now after seeing that clip, I'm like, is that what I look like? Is that because when he plays that song too, like it doesn't seem like, you know, oh yeah, here's something I do in my spare time and, you know, just picks it up. It seems like he's really practiced. Like he's really concentrating really hard and he's really practiced. In an attempt to look completely affable and kind of spontaneous, it comes across the complete opposite, so contrived and so overthought.
It's a very lockdown thing to do. I remember lots of friends of mine, or lots, that's a stretch, but like did kind of try to learn the ukulele right. Kind of when they were in, you know, the initial lockdown. Like what drew you to the ukulele?
Iona, we got her just like a toy one. And she really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked it up and started playing it and realized, because I love music, but I'm not musical. And I tried to learn guitar, but I've got these short, stumpy fingers. These like Irishman fingers. And I can say that because I'm half Irish.
I just want to note that Charlie, we're on FaceTime and Charlie was showing me his hands. And I'm like, mate, I've known since I was 10 that you had short, stumpy fingers.
Short stuff. That's my defining characteristic, apart from my enormous dick.
And weird chest.
And weird chest. So I thought, well, I'll get a guitar because I could play it because I worked out that once I know about three or four chords, there's lots of stuff I could play. So I could play for Iona, and then yep. I realized playing her shitty little guitar that it was going out of tune. I was like, well, if I spend a bit more money and get a good one, then I can actually play. And so that's what happened. Is I just got myself a really good ukulele, and I really enjoy it. Like. It's funny because I have friends who are musicians who have come to visit and we've been playing around with it and they're giving me all these like tips on, you know, and it's like, this is not something I'm going to pursue. Like, I'm not intending to be good at this. It's just like a nice stress relief.
You're not going
to
go pro.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it would be amazing if that was my new career. Like if I could suddenly become the number one ukulele playing musician in the world. Like, I don't even know who's like Jack Johnson or Tiny Tim. Like, who's up there now? Is Tiny Tim still alive?
I think you could make upwards of $1,500 a year if you became the number one ukulele player in the world. I think Gemma would break up with you pretty quickly if you said, I'm going to go pro on the
She's very patient, I think, Jem, because the other night I think I was really pushing it. We've been really busy the last couple of weeks pitching on a bunch of jobs. So I've been doing a lot of late nights, like putting Iona to bed and staying up and working. And we'd worked on this one treatment pitching for this job, and it was a 120-page document we'd put together. So just like massive. And so we were going through it page by page, just, you know, making sure we're happy with the images, happy with the copy. And it was taking so long, I was like, you know what? I need a de-stressor as we go through this. So I sat behind Jem as she was going through it and just like strummed my ukulele, just practiced my chords. And I could just sort of see the back of her, like every time I would like play a bum note, just like tense up a little bit. But she didn't once ever ask me to stop playing the fucking ukulele.
Are there particular tunes that you can play? Like can you play Sweet Child of Mine or something?
I can play Creep, Radiohead. I can play Handle with Care by the Traveling Wilburys.
Okay.
I can play Home by Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. I can play... What can I play? I can play the Philip Tufnell. Oh!
You should play... you should learn the St. Kilda theme song.
Oh, that's easy. Yeah, yeah.
Get it,
you know what? It's
early.
Not. Sorry. When I say I should actually just qualify. When I say I can play those chords, but the actual strumming, like, because, you know, different songs have different strumming patterns, I'm not 100% on. Like, I can play the chords,
sure,
but the flair around it and getting, like, if you're going to play When the Saints Go Marching In, it's got to be like a jaunty dun 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 dun. I don't have that down yet because, Michael, as a left-hander, for some reason, I'm inclined to play two-handed instruments like guitar and ukulele right-handed. So ordinarily, you're a left-handed, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So ordinarily, you would be working the fret with your right hand and plucking the strings with your left, which is probably good for like plucking coordination. But for some reason, I play like a right-hander. So I pluck the strings with my right hand and work the neck of the ukulele with my left hand, which I've been told is weird.
Well, I have a weird feeling that Paul McCartney plays guitar
left-handed bass
upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a story I worked on a show a few years ago, and there was a story about you know, those people who kind of go, well, they kind of scientists, and they go into kind of lockdown for like a year and a half or so, and to pretend that they're on Mars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And kind of, you know, do experiments and
recycle
stuff like that.
So
they're in the desert somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. And
Mike, what do you mean suppose so? That's all I think about. Is how much of your own piss did you
every
drink?
Day? And there was a lady, and before she went in, so they're getting locked up for a year and a half, 2 years, whatever. And they had her at a ukulele shop, and she was going to buy a ukulele. Had never played it before, and was going to teach herself to play it. And it's like, how quickly were you going to be murdered by the five other people who were trapped in there with you? Like, I was like, of all the instruments, like, just there's something about string instruments not played well, yeah, which are particularly grating, like a violin or
it's
something.
It's like she's got, well, I've got 18 months to learn an instrument. Hand me those bagpipes.
For sure, for sure. And it was that kind of thing where it was like, you know, you were only allowed to go outside of the enclosure. You know, you had to kind of pretend that you're a Mart, yeah, so you had to put on a space suit, and like it would have been quite stressful. And like I mentioned, they're kind of like trying to grow food or whatever.
And drink their own piss. Don't forget that bit.
Area, yeah. And it's like, mate, if someone brought out a uke, you'd stab them in the chest pretty quickly.
She walks into like the mess tent. And she's like, who smashed my ukulele? And they're like, oh, no, it broke up on re-entry. What are you talking about? This is a simulation. We didn't fly anywhere. No. When we landed, it smashed. Oh, I'm so sorry.
But did you ever play an instrument at school?
Yeah, I played guitar. I did a classical guitar for like a year and a half or 2 years. But I got found out really badly. Our final year of what would you call Costco? It was like a pre-high school. Like we did 4 years of a...
Year 5 to 8.
Yeah, it's like a pre-high school. And in our final year of that, so before we moved to the senior school, I was learning guitar, and we did a big end of year performance. They had like a band. And so it was me and one other guy were playing guitar, and I couldn't play. I was not up to speed. I should not have been in the band, but I kind of liked it. And I felt like while the other instruments were playing, I could sort of fake it. And I remember...
In cover,
what
yeah.
was his name? Was it Mr. Dooley, the music teacher?
At Costco, yeah, it was.
Yeah, so I remember we were doing our final rehearsal, and we're all playing, and I was just like miming and occasionally hitting a bum note or whatever. And I remember him sort of just like, he's looking at us and he was scanning the band because he could hear something not right. And so he's like, horn stop. And then he's like, string stop. And he's like, getting closer and closer. And he gets to play. Me and whoever the other guy was on guitar. And he's like, just play the chorus. And I just couldn't play. And he's like, right. And so he got me to stay back, and he's like, look, you know, the performance is tomorrow night or whatever it is, it's fine. I'm not going to ask you not to play. I'm just going to ask you not to play. So he let me get up on stage and just like Milli Vanilli it.
Because I think there was a realization, like I used to play the clarinet. I don't really know why, but I think my brother did it, and therefore I kind
of for all
did
the chicks,
well.
Right? That's why you learnt clarinet.
I mean, you know, if Woody Allen... is the standout for clarinet players around the world.
Yeah, and Kenny G.
And I could still, if you handed me one today, like I could still probably, you know, I could, you know, bust out.
What's
a,
the coolest
a tune.
Song you could play on the clarinet though? Like how? I mean, do you just play saxophone songs but with a clarinet?
Well, I think it's more like. I think back then it was like the step up was always to go to the saxophone because that obviously was a bit
yeah I know but if you had to all right so you know you had to seduce a woman with your
okay,
clarinet
okay if I play clarinet I think
what
I'd
song
I think I'd play the Yeah, I think it'd be...
For the Star Wars cantina?
They seem to be on space clarinets.
Could you play...
I imagine that.
Could you play the intro to Careless Whisper?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, but it would have much more bite with a sax.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things about, like, you know, playing in orchestras or whatever is that they never really told you, like, you're not playing the tune here. Like, you know, obviously songs have layers and, you know, there's different bits. And so you're there kind of reading sheet music and you're kind of like going, why aren't I playing the tune song. Of the yeah. thing? Like, I'm just doing like a ramp.
Yeah, ramp, that's ramp, true.
Every 2 seconds or whatever. And you go like, okay, songs have layers. Okay, yeah, I've got true. It. Okay, yeah, sure.
That's funny because I've never really... I played drums for a little bit as well, but this is the first time I've ever really sort of got into, like, I guess, you know, a musical instrument, not percussion. And that exact realization coming to me, because you can pretty much find any song, like they'll give you the chords for it. There's a website called Yuki Tabs, which will just like give you, break it down in the simplest. What are you laughing at?
I just find it funny that you've reached this point in your
life.
I know.
It's tragic. I am Scott Morrison.
But it's quite sweet. I mean, you're doing it for your daughter.
No,
you
know, no, that was the pretense. It's now all about me and my serious ambitions to become the world's number one ukulele player.
Play at weddings.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did. Oh, fuck, man. You're really going to expose me now. I do have this kind of fantasy that maybe at like our Gemini, our next like wedding anniversary or significant milestone event, that I'm going to surprise her by getting up and playing like one of her favorite songs on the ukulele.
Yeah, sure. No, it'd be like, isn't it quite renowned, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Yeah, that's a classic. I was thinking where I was going to get up there and go, you let me penetrate you. You let me violate you. Help me, I broke apart my insides.
Sex I can smell.
You let me, you like Kanye, an animal.
I think Kanye surprised Kim Kardashian on their wedding anniversary or maybe Valentine's Day or something. And it was like, if I remember correctly, it was like a wall of, like a floor of roses when she kind of woke up, I suppose. Yeah. And it was Kenny G playing. I was like... Like, I get, like, that's, you know, you're trying to make a romantic gesture, but it's like, I think you've gone wrong many different ways in this scenario. But is he a clarinet? Was he an oboe guy?
I thought he was clarinet.
He must be both. Yeah. He must play a bunch of the variations. Yeah.
Did you see
fuck.
The click hole, you know, the Onion BuzzFeed kind of rip off? They had an article the other day that just had me in tears. I don't know, let's see if I find the headline for it. Oh, yeah. So the headline is, the L's keep coming for Ye. Mr. Bean just texted Kanye a video of himself having goofy sex with Kim Kardashian. So the fallout of Kanye West and Kim Kardashian's divorce has been a spectacle with no shortage of public drama, bitter press statements, and new love interests complicating the situation. Unfortunately for Ye, he's just taken his biggest L of the entire ordeal. Mr. Bean just texted Kanye a video of himself having goofy sex with Kim Kardashian. Yikes, poor Kanye. Earlier today...
And I imagine like Mr. Bean like has like a turkey stuck on his head or something.
Wait. Earlier today, Kanye was busy in the studio with Travis Scott and Future when he suddenly received a video message from Mr. Bean without any context or accompanying text. After pressing play, Kanye's face contorted with rage and confusion as he watched the footage of a scrawny nude white man with a turkey on his head motorboating his wife. Only after Kim yanked the turkey off the man's head, resulting in a wet pop that sent Kim flying backwards across the room onto a Murphy bed, which then sprung back vertically against the wall with Kim still inside. Did Kanye realize that the man in the video was none other than Mr. Bean himself, having goofy sex with Kanye's ex-wife? According to sources who saw the footage, Mr. Bean looked directly into the camera with a grin, his fingertips excitedly wiggling, then raced over to begin several failed attempts at freeing Kim from the Murphy bed, accidentally folding her back into the wall no fewer than 6 times. Producers did their best to calm Kanye, who allegedly began storming around the booth and shouting how Mr. Bean was a fake friend, his eyes glued to the video, as it reached the part in which Mr. Bean became flustered, putting on a condom, and ended up with his whole leg stuck inside it. Kanye was said to have held out hope that Mr. Bean's ineptitude with the contraceptive meant Kim and Bean's silly intercourse wouldn't go any further, but that hope was short-lived. Around the 11-minute mark of the footage, Mr. Bean got the condom on by having Kim hold it open as he dove atop it from several precariously stacked chairs next to the bed, bonking his head on a ceiling light fixture and electrocuting himself in the process. By the time Ye watched London's most socially inept mute guy maneuver a teddy bear's arms to investigate and poke at Kim's buttocks, appearing unsure what to make of it, the session was chalked up to a loss. Sources say Kanye was no longer in any condition to make music. "How could he do this to me? The mother of my children," Kanye exclaimed as he slumped to the floor, unable to believe his ex would share such wacky intimacy with Mr. Bean. The hip-hop artist's friends say his heart hit rock bottom only when a baffled, nervous Bean treated penetration like he was dipping his toe in a swimming pool that he was afraid to dive into. His facial expressions morphing from fear to curiosity to pleasant surprise to foolishly over-the-top pleasure once he got the hang of it. Thankfully for Kanye, the video ended soon after that as Mr. Bean and Kim both finished at the same time, Bean's face dropping in horror as Kim moaned and writhed in ecstasy under the impression he'd done something wrong. The final seconds of the footage show Bean then tiptoeing out of the room and sprinting to the street in broad daylight, completely nude. Oof, that's the last thing Kanye needed to see right now.
Dude.
Oh, my God.
Oh, fuck.
That made me laugh so much. I wanted to send you that.
Mr. Bean's...
But I was like, I don't know.
Mr. Bean is genius.
Mr. Bean, the show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like genius.
Is it?
Just by the fact it means you can... And I'm sure they did. You can sell it to every country in the world.
Yeah, you're right.
Because it's just visual, and everybody gets that. You know, like
they're still making Mr. Bean. Who doesn't love movies, aren't they?
That's a really good question. Yeah,
I mean, I think they are.
They've made a couple, haven't they?
Well, I feel like there was a Johnny English recently. I mean, Rowan Atkinson absolutely loaded, right?
You'd imagine. I think the Bean money would be still coming in. A bit like I'm sure like they had a show years ago, but Leno and Woodley.
Yeah.
Because it's a very visual thing, you know, so you can sell it to a thing. And then also like it can appeal to 80-year-olds and 8-year-olds. I mean, I reckon if you showed Iona Mr. Bean, I reckon she'd get it.
Well, it says here they're still making Mr. Beans. I don't know if they're animated or not though. So there's a series called Old Bean that's in production right now. And then there's Mr. Bean, the animated series. There's a TV series from 2018 to 2020 called Handy Bean. But I don't know if it's animated or not. No, it's live action, unless it's a compilation. I'm just going off IMDb. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, sure.
You would have thought he could stop doing it now. He must love it.
I wonder, do you remember he was in the 2012 opening ceremony for the London Olympics?
No, I don't remember that. Was that the one with Daniel Craig walking with to see the Queen or something? Or am I
the Queen? Yeah. It's actually a very entertaining opening ceremony, but it's the premise was that they, as a tribute to, you know, the 30th anniversary of Chariots of Fire or whatever, they'd an orchestra came out to kind of play the theme from Chariots of Fire, and then it cuts to Rowan Atkinson on the piano. And he's playing like the one note the whole time. And kind of then he gets a bit, you know, annoyed. And then he kind of, I think he plays it with like an umbrella while he kind of checks his phone and stuff like that. But it was very entertaining.
I didn't realize you're such a Mr. Bean fan. You're a Bean booster.
Well, I don't really remember watching the show, Greg Dale. I can still picture him with a turkey on his head. But I
feel
like
Mr. Bean was one of those kind of safe things that a teacher could put on in a free period. I felt like that's where I saw
for sure, yeah, rainy day.
Yeah.
Yeah, rainy day when you're not going out to lunch. Yeah, they could definitely do that, yeah. Weren't those the days when the teacher would just wheel in the TV and you'd be like, oh, shit, yeah.
Look, and get your lunch out early. Get those Smith's crisps open. I was just trying to remember when those instances were. Was that what it was? It was rainy day entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one bit. Well, maybe this might get me cancelled.
Go on. Oh, here we go.
But there was an English teacher and showed us Gandhi, the film. And in the opening scene, spoiler, he gets shot. And he goes, and what is it? Ben
Kingsley.
Is he actually played Gandhi?
Kingsley.
Yeah. And he kind of goes, oh no, and collapses. And we all lost our shit. And we were just laughing. We just laughed for like a minute. And we're like, play it again, play it again, play it again. And she literally was like, okay, and rewound it and played it again. And we all lost our shit again. Oh my God. Oh, dude.
That's a pretty heavy film. That's not show. Right. What are you, like grade 5? It's grade 6 or something?
I think that was about year 10 or something.
I was trying to actually work out. I had a mate text me last week asking if I'd seen the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League and if it's okay for his 10-year-old to watch. And I was like, no, it's probably not. It's, you know, it's pretty violent and some Dark Sunner stuff going on. And it is like...
Do they swear much and stuff in
those there's
kind
some
of films,
swearing
or?
And stuff, but I think it's just more like it's kind of sort of intense, like violence and stuff like that. I mean, comic booky, but a bit darker than the Marvel. But I sent him that text and then I thought about it and I was like, hang on, but his son's 10. I feel like when I was 10, we were watching, like, you know, Running Man and a bunch of other kind of stuff. You know, like Schwarzenegger films, which had huge body counts and violence. Like, don't you think? 1987, what do you reckon was the... What were you watching in 87?
I was watching mainly art films because I'm a sophisticated
Jamon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, well, that's got a lot of nudity in it, so you can't defeat the purpose.
Well, I just seem to remember I was obsessed with like the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Like I remember getting in trouble in year 5 because I drew Freddy in art class, like with a bunch of hacked up teenagers. But I don't know if it's one of those things where times have changed where, I mean, it feels like either kids are seeing more now because of the internet or entertainment is more sanitized. I can't work out what it is. Because I was talking about this with Guy Davis, who I do a movie podcast with, and he was saying that since like porn has become so prevalent on the internet, like erotic thrillers and sex in mainstream movies has become really compartmentalized. Like, you know, back in the day, you would see mainstream actors getting naked and stuff, and that was kind of a selling point for a film. Whereas it's very rare now for people to do kind of nude scenes, and definitely rare for that to be like, here's a sexy new, you know, thriller starring blah, blah, blah. Like those films are just kind of straight to streaming now.
Well, do you remember maybe about 18, 19 and with another mate we went to see Barbara Wire with Pamela
I was
Anderson.
Thinking about that the other day, yeah.
And I think we showed up a little bit late and like the guy taking the tickets was like, dudes, get in. You want to see the opening scene? And I think it's her being hosting with water on a stripper pole or something. Right, yeah. But it was funny. The guy was like, I know why you're here. Get in. You got to see this scene.
I remember too, because that was in our first year of uni. And there was a dude in our class. Let's just call him Nick K. Who he was a friend of ours. Like we were friends with him. But we did like making fun of him behind his back, mainly because he sort of had these pretentious aspirations of artistry. And I remember you and I came to uni on the Monday after seeing Barb Wire and telling him, and the look of repulsion and disdain on his face that we'd gone to see that garbage. And I remember one of us said, well, all right, so you don't think Pamela Anderson's hot? Who do you think's hot? And he said, Liv Tyler in Stealing Beauty, because you look at her and she's just got soul. And I was like, fuck you! Do you remember when we rang his answering machine message, me, you, and Mika? We left.
I don't have much memory.
You don't?
This person. No.
Oh fuck, man! Because he had one of those
Maybe off air, you can tell me like his full name. And maybe that might jog the memory. But
no, it's easy. It rhymes with. It rhymes with there's a job description. If you at the, it rhymes with butcher. Sorry.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about now? but do you remember when We found out he had like a really enigmatic voicemail message. He had like in Reality Bites, Ethan Hawke's voicemail message is like, you know, hey, I'm not here. Leave a definition of irony before the beep. Beep. You know, it's really cool Gen X kind of thing.
Oh, God.
And his was like, hey, you know what to do or something like that. And so we just, I don't know what you'd call it, but we basically bombed his answering machine. We kept calling it back and leaving increasingly fucked up messages, me, you and Mika. It just made us laugh so much. We kept calling it back, just filling up his answering machine.
That's bullying, Charles. I can't believe you put me up to that.
I think that, you know, if
no, I mean, I look back at a lot of things and I kind of go, oh, yeah, that's bullying. Like, it's not like intentional. Like, it's just like making fun and stuff. But I'm like, yeah, I've got no time for the funny answering machine.
Oh, do people even use answering machines nowadays? Do people do voicemails anymore?
Well, I mean, voicemail. Yeah. Yeah.
My neighbor, was having a party. We saw him on Thursday. His wife's away. She's taking the kids away. Not taking the kids. She's just gone away with the kids. And he was like, oh, just to let you know, it's my birthday on the weekend and some friends are coming down from the Gold Coast. So it might be a little loud. You're more than welcome to come over, but, you know, just apologies in advance. And so what I thought was meant to be like just Friday night turned out to be like the whole weekend. And I've been listening to these guys through the wall because they're quite loud. And the level of bullying is off the hook. Like, in any other context, if you didn't know they were friends, if you just were walking past this house randomly, walking your dog, and you heard it, you'd be like, fucking hell. Like, some guy's getting the shit ripped out of him while everyone's laughing. At one stage, I heard them talking about this one guy, and he's like, mate, your calves are the fucking biggest calves I've ever seen. It's not even like calves. You've just got two thighs that run all the way down. And then everyone's fucking like running into him. It's just like, holy shit. There is a fine line with male friendship, isn't it? Between just like friendship and bullying. It's kind of like professional wrestling. Like, you know, you'd think it was a fight on the surface, but then you dig a little deeper and you understand that like it's all cool. Everyone's aware of what's going on.
Well, if I can take you back to like, and this is one of my kind of stories I like, was that when we had Scott Dooley on our Two Guys Jump Time grand final show, like 2018. And he'd paid $4,000 to come out from New York and the Pies lost in like the last minute. It was like the most aching, you know, loss you can have.
Yeah. Led all day.
And I remember going up to him before the show and just being like, hey man, we gotta do it. Like, we got to do it. And he's like, yeah, I get it. And I think after the show, I think he told me that, like, the rest of you guys, like Adam and Will and you, went up to him as well and was like, hey, man, we got to do it. But, like for 90 minutes, it was a hate crime. Like, we destroyed him for 90, like, the most aching moment of his fucking life. We destroyed him for 90 minutes. And then I remember walking off stage after that and just going, like, and that's our mate.
Feeling
like,
dirty.
We did that to a friend. And I'm well aware if Hawthorn loses a grand final, like, I'm going to get it too.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wear it, you know. Like, if we lose it in that way, like, I'm going to wear it. Like, I think we'd go, like, we went fine on Will this year. And I think for Rosie and you, I think we'd be like, particularly you, I don't think we could rip the shit out of you. Like, I think that would actually just be me.
Oh, that's bullshit. But like, I would fully expect it. I mean, I think the difference between, like, I think sport is the perfect outlet for bullying because it doesn't really mean anything. Like, you saying to him, your team was shit and, you know, they had a chance of glory and they fucked it up and blah, 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 blah. It's not a comment on him. It's an arbitrary choice he's made to follow a group of jumpers running around. So he can't take that
uniform.
He can't take that personally. Like, it's not like you're picking on like his wife, you know, someone he's chosen to spend the rest of his life with. Like, he can leave this relationship with Collingwood at any time with zero consequences. There's no real world consequences.
Yeah, fuck, man. Yeah,
I mean, I think it's even like, harsher I think it would even be harsher if you told me that you loved, like, the music of, I don't know, Taylor Swift or something. You were a Swiftie. You came out and said, Charlie, I just fucking love Swiftie. I think it would be meaner of me to pick on you for liking Taylor Swift than Hawthorne, I think, is fair game. Because I don't know, Taylor Swift sort of is more personal and you've made a choice there. So if I'm like going to bash that, then I'm, you know, I'm picking on something close to you. You're a Swiftie for a reason. Whereas, I don't know. Like, I don't think there's any, it wasn't like you decided to like Hawthorne. You were kind of born into it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got much shit coming your way. Like, you've had such an embarrassment of riches. Like, you deserve a bit of a flogging. Like, I'll take it.
If we do lose one, I'm showing up on that Sunday and I'm ready. You know, 4 p.m. on a Sunday, whatever, 2022, when Hawthorne, you know, obviously going to make the grand final. I'm showing up and I'm ready and I might as well like wear like armor or something.
I know
for all
the
jazz I'm going to get.
The Zoom show is not the same as being on stage, but I thought Will handled this year or last year pretty well. Like, I mean, that was a heartbreaking loss where they're up in the third quarter and then just got completely torched. But he seemed very chill with it. Like, I even think he said something along the lines of, oh, I realize that it's just a game and you can't win everyone and fine, you know, or move on.
Well, I think he said also, like, you know, if you told him that my team was going to make the grand final, I'd be happy with that, you know. You know, even if we do lose, like, it's obviously been a long time at the Wilderness for the Dogs. And then, what, 2 in 5 years?
But it was a little infuriating that he wasn't.
So we should have gone, what I'm trying to say is, like, we should have gone fucking harder on him.
I agree.
We should have made him cry.
I agree, but I don't think he, I think he was really smart. He didn't, he basically brushed it off so early and made him, made it seem like he didn't care that any insults or gags we made along the way, it just rolled off his back. And I also think too, because of the fact that it was more of a historic win for Melbourne, we were more occupied with giving airtime to Broden and Titus because they were so ecstatic. But we really, we missed an opportunity. I mean, in fact, I hope the Dogs make it again this year and lose just so we can really fucking give it to him.
And just so we can get back to a live crowd and so we can just like destroy him in public while he can hear the laughter.
I'm just trying to see, when was the last, 2012 would have been the last grand final you guys lost, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so can you imagine fronting up with, I mean, I'm just trying to think about 2010 and what that would have been like. I reckon I'd be fine to front up. We got smashed by Collingwood in the replay. And I think it was so clear that, you know, the Geelong one would have been harder because we should have won that game. But I think I'd be all right.
Yeah, I mean, you got to wear what you wear. And also it's coming from mates, you know. Like, I'd be annoyed if, like, I was just, like, on a pod or something and a random started teeing off on me.
Yeah.
And I'd be like going, where's that? I don't know you. Like, shut up. But 2012, I think we lost by about 10 points and we went in as like favourites and we were kind of, you know, the best team all year, but they like, you know, cocked it up. But to go into it, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's part of the fun. Like, we're all mates and so we can all, you know, tee off on each other.
Well, the weird thing about...
And you don't take offence.
The weird thing about Two Guys, One Cup is it was started for Will and I to commiserate. It was meant to be about our teams both being historically bad. But now he's like, he's in weird rarefied air where it's like he's a contender and I'm still, you know, the Saints are still just where they are. And it's just, it's not, it's annoying. It's annoying. Fronting up to do the show last year when we had such an underwhelming year was so hard. Like, I even know you reached out to me to say, like, man, I just listened to the new episode. Are you okay? Like, there was...
Yeah, because wasn't the one where, like, you were just like, I think I'm done?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, why do I put myself through this? And it's like, okay, Charlie,
it's
maybe it was a you okay day. Charlie,
you were not the only one. Like, I had many, you know, very, and I'm very grateful, very considerate listeners who did reach out. I can't remember what the game was. Probably the Adelaide one, we were 50 points up at halftime and then we lose by a kick just 10 seconds before the siren. And that was to get into the eight. And I remember it just being one of those things of the thing about St Kilda, it's not so much, you can live with the being shit. We know that, we're used to it. But it's the little spikes you get where you think maybe, just maybe, like, you know, 2020 was a really good year. We won a final and you're
it's
like.
A little tease.
Yeah, a little tease. It's the hope that kills you, Michael. That's the thing. It's just like, I don't know what the cure for this is. Like, I do have real concerns that I'm going to die without ever seeing a flag. And I will have to question the amount of time I've put into following football for no fucking reason. But I, you know, just seeing Broden and Titus and how happy they were, and Broden and I have been in touch, and you know, I keep asking, "What's it like, man? What's it like?" And he's just like, "It's so good. It's so good. Like, you'll never feel better about anything ever." It's like, well, I'm a father, but I'm willing to believe that this could top that.
Yeah, how quickly will Iona's birth and, you know, your wedding day with Gemma be relegated to slots 2 and 3 when the Saints win the flag?
Well, let's put it this way. I reckon I've maybe looked back at the photos we had taken when Iona was born. You know, we had some photos around that time. I reckon I've looked at those maybe 3 or 4 times. But a replay of the Saints winning the grand final, I reckon I could clock 20 views like within 2 months. I reckon I would watch that every day.
Oh, dude, more than that. But also, it's the gift that keeps on giving too. So if I'm just like kind of bummed or down or whatever, I'm like, oh, I'll just watch the highlights of 2014. So you get on YouTube and you watch like a little 5-minute, 10-minute chunk of the goals and stuff, and you go, oh, I feel better now.
See, I do that, but then I have to stop it before the end. So literally 2 weeks ago, I was watching 2009 highlights where we didn't lose a game till round 16. And I'm like, fuck, this is awesome. We are such a good team. And here comes the grand final. Turn it off. Goodbye. I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah. It's funny how quickly – I actually had a mate who barracks with the Dogs, and he messaged me like a couple of days after the grand final. And he's like, when does the hurt end? And I'm like, I'm sorry, mate. It doesn't. Like, I'm sorry. Like, obviously he'd never seen a losing one. And I'm like, oh, I hate to break it to you, mate, but like anytime that game comes on TV, on Fox Footy or whatever, you're like, no, switch off. Like, even, I mean, you know, like they have grand final marathons and all that kind of stuff, and they always play 84, and I'm just like, no, I'm not watching that. I've literally never watched that, last quarter.
I've watched snippets.
I was there, I lived it.
I've watched 97. There's enough time away from 97 that I was able to watch that. I watched that on a plane when I had some time to kill. But 2009, I can't watch it, because that's the one that I feel like we should have won. And then 2010, we would have stolen it from Collingwood. But, oh man, like there's just so many amazing performances in that game, and Goddard's mark and Lenny Hayes' goal. And it's just, that's the heartbreaking one, because you're like, that would have carved those, like those moments would be legend. Like Goddard's mark would be considered one of the greatest grand final marks of all time. Lenny Hayes, Norm Smith would have, you know, made him an immortal. Well, I guess he's Hall of Fame in the AFL anyway, but yeah. It's just that St Kilda fucking lack. Just don't deliver. Just don't deliver when we need to.
This sounds more like a therapy session now. I think you should.
Well, all right. Well, it's a good time to wrap it up. I mean, we didn't even get to what I wanted to talk about, but we did get into Kanye, Mr. Bean having goofy sex, which I think is a win. Are you doing shows at the Comedy Festival this year?
No. So I've taken a full time job, so I don't have the time to do it, but also I got nothing, man. Like,
all right.
I will film, like, maybe I won't keep you across this, but I will film like an hour of stand-up, let's call it a special, at some stage, like post-election. I'm
is
just kind of waiting
uncancelable?
To find out. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say some pretty real things.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I don't know, keep, if you subscribe to Junk Time or whatever, I can keep you informed on that. Just like film an hour, and but just wait until after the election, because there's some ScoMo stuff that I, sorry, not calling him ScoMo, Scott Morrison stuff that I want to find out like who's the Prime Minister before I actually do it. So so it's not like dated immediately. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be the producers of the classic Australian film Diana and Me.
Oh, dude.
Making a film all about Princess Diana, and then she has to go die while you're in post-production.
Dude, I mean, this is like a different kind of thing, but it's a film thing. But I worked on the Actor Awards, like in like mid-December or so. And what was the film called? The film, it won like Best Film, and it's essentially kind of about Martin Bryant.
Oh, yeah. Nit Ram.
And then...
It's Martin
and
backwards.
I was looking at their kind of IMDb when I was doing research on them. Mm. It's like the same dude's made Snowtown.
Mm.
And it's like, how committed are you to being fucking depressed for 4 years? Like making two of the most depressing films of all time. It's like, obviously you got to do research, you got to do, you know, court cases and stuff like that. And it's like, fuck, you guys are fucking hardcore. with your commitment to be crying every 5 minutes.
When you were reaching for that name, Ram, I thought you said Nudge, and I'm like, they've made Nudge the movie? I've got to see that.
Best film.
Nudge.
Gets the catering budget, mate. The catering budget.
It's just 2 hours of him walking into the kitchen, opening the fridge, and going, g'day, Mr. Kelly. Nudge.
Mr. Kelly, I think you're going to go away for a stretch, Mr. Kelly.
All right, that's Fovop this week. Thank you, Chambo, for coming back on the show. Check out his podcast, Junk Time. I nearly called it Two Guys, One Cup. Junk Time AFL. Two Guys, One Cup will be coming back soon too. And also, just remember, there's an ad at the start of the show, but Will is doing stand-up shows. First two are at the Brunswick Picture House, then he's going to the Adelaide Fringe. So go to willanderson.com for more details. I'm Charlie Clawson. Yes,
I'm really cool.
Yes, and.
And I'm Charlie Clawson.
No!